The poppies are in bloom along the highways, in those median strips. The poppies are in bloom in Flanders fields far away. The poppies are in bloom in hidden fields close by. We remember. We remember. We remember. I grew up around military bases and sometimes on them. To me, those bases were just where I lived, went to school, played kickball. They had all these center courtyard sort of things with around base housing, which is great if you're an introverted kid, because you didn't have to go find anybody to play with. You just had to look out the window and see who was there. Had birthday parties with people who were just nearby. And then there was Air Force Day on the base, and the Thunderbirds would come and do an air show, and you got to go look at the airplanes up close and meet the pilots. My dad happened to be not one of the Thunderbird pilots, but a co-pilot in the Air Force when I was growing up. We have a photo in our family album of me, probably about 4 years old, in a pale yellow jacket with a pointed hood that had a little tassel on it. A serious frown on my face as I sat in the cockpit of one of those fighter jets. That was a fun day, and the sky was blue, and there were balloons and ice cream. And there were fighter jets. And there were some people who weren't there who had been the year before. All of those years seemed normal to me and to my sister, probably not so normal to my mother and my father. They seldom talked about what he did for a living. And Dad would always bring souvenirs home for my mom and my sister and I from wherever he had been, as if it were a business trip. I still have a doll he brought me back from Vietnam. Not until I was a young adult working in Washington, D.C., did the cost of military service hit home when my dad and I went together to the Vietnam Memorial. He looked for and found the names of five of the people in his squadron on that wall. When we got home, he pulled out this enormous scrapbook. It had to be put under the bed. It wasn't one of those up on the shelf. And it was filled with newspaper clippings about the war, the struggle, the fight in Vietnam. It had photographs of him. They were black and white photographs. And he said those were taken at dawn when they came back from bombing runs. And they would have steak breakfast cooked on the grill right outside their barracks. And beer. Beer for breakfast, Dad? Beer for breakfast. He was smiling in those photographs. Wouldn't you? You made it back. He seldom talked about his work, even after he had retired, even after it had been as many years of retirement from service as it was in the service, in active service. And not quite 10 years ago, on Memorial Day, in the small town of Berryville, Virginia, my dad was awarded his second Distinguished Flying Cross. This was a surprise to me. I didn't know about the first one. It was apparently awarded to him on the tarmac after a run many years ago, right there in Vietnam. The second one was awarded this many years later because the mission he flew had been declassified for the first time since the war. He told me that story. And I cried. My dad had been flying a mission over Laos. He was supposed to give ground support to troops and to help save a village. And what he did was nearly ground his plane because it ran out of fuel while he was waiting for the ground troops to arrive at the village to provide relief for the villagers. He told me more about those missions and about the feasts that they had and what they ate. And all I could think was, I am so glad you're home, Dad. I am so glad you're home. I think about the families of those who serve in the military, because we often talk about those who have gone to fight. And sometimes we don't think about who else is serving. For many months at a time, my mom was mom and dad. And my mom took care of my sister and I and got us where we needed to go. And she worked part-time and got us to school and music lessons and dance lessons and made sure the bills were paid and the food was on the table, and that when it was time for us to move again because we were assigned someplace else, that we got packed up. She also made incredible birthday cakes. Incredible birthday cakes. Cinderella's coach. And made sure that the kiddie pool was all ready in the summer when we were outside and playing. And I remember after my dad retired, how sometimes things at home were tense. And I think it was because my mom said, it's your turn now, Dad. It's your turn now. And what my dad wanted to do was take a nap because tired. But one thing we never saw was my dad having to be treated for PTSD, for those night terrors. My dad came back all the way. My dad came back all the way. And I feel blessed for that. In the book Soul Repair, the title of this sermon comes from that book. The authors talk about something that is not PTSD, that is not a big diagnosis that has physical symptoms so much, but about moral injury. What happens when the deepest, most closely held beliefs about the world that you have lived with all your life get turned upside down? What happens when you consistently have to act against those? That's moral injury. From the book, after we send men and women off to war, how do we bring them home in peace? I've wondered about that, the practice of coming home. In ancient times, they were wise enough to know that there needed to be a period set aside for the coming back, home, the reintegrating yourself into normal mode. Even in early Christian history, there was that set aside time, the practice of rebaptism. Start again. Be washed clean, perhaps. I think of these things and of my dad and my mom and my sister and I. And I think about the, I have to look up the right number, 16 million. 16 million veterans who live in this country now. What have we done for them? What have we done for us? What have we done for us? Also from Soul Repair, societies have only understood war as much as they really wanted to learn about it and its deeper meaning. Societies have only understood war as much as they really wanted to learn about it and its deeper meaning. We're about to celebrate Memorial Day. It's a time to remember and honor those who have served this country, sometimes at the cost of their lives, increasingly at the cost of their limbs. And sometimes Memorial Day is for picnics and family. Let's remember that and hold that up too, because we need to do that as a society. Remember what that was for. When veterans return to our communities after war, we owe it to them and ourselves to do our best to support them in their recovery. To do so, however, we must be willing to engage the same intense moral questions that veterans undertake about our own responsibility as a society for having sent them to war. I read that a few too many times because that hurt. That hurt. What have I done? What have I done? What have we done? What have I done to stop another one? Another family, another war, another family going off to war. Right now, it feels like there's not much I can do. My youngest son will be 16 next month. Yes, he was born about a year after September 11th, 2001. All his life, this country has been involved in a war. So that's normal for him. I don't want it to be normal for him, or for you, or for our grandchildren. I don't want living after a war and through a war to be normal. I don't want moral injury to be a thing. And yet it is. So what will I do about it? A call to action. I don't know yet. I will write letters. I have written letters. I have taught my sons a different way to solve disputes. I would bet you've thought of those and you practice those different ways. And still, I'd like to invite you into a practice with me. A spiritual practice. And this particular model of it I learned in all places from a podcast. Yes, a 21st century thing. Called Harry Potter and the Sacred Text. Which seems like an odd thing to juxtapose with a sermon for Memorial Day. But if you've read Harry Potter or seen the movies, you know that they were in a struggle too. And that Harry Potter himself chose different ways. There are four parts to this spiritual practice called Lectio Divina. One passage read four times and examined in four different ways. And I would like you to be part of this. So take a moment and find a partner, or maybe two, depending on how many people we have. And this first reading, I'll kind of go through just so you hear what it sounds like. The sentence is from Soul Repair. On this first reading, I'll read the passage and then think about what is literally happening in the sentence, what's going on according to the words in the sentence. The second reading, which I will ask you to discuss amongst yourselves, will be to look at that phrase allegorically. So pull out a word or a phrase within the sentence and examine it deeply to give the sentence more meaning. The third read of this same sentence is, what does that sentence remind us of in our own lives? And the fourth reading of that same sentence is, what is it that we have been called to, not only by the sentence, but by the process of the conversation we've had? What will we do? The sentence is in your order of service as well, in case you need a reminder of that. It's at the end of it. From Soul Repair, Recovering from Moral Injury After War. Moral injury results when soldiers violate their core moral beliefs, and in evaluating their behavior negatively, they feel they no longer live in a reliable, meaningful world, and can no longer be regarded as decent human beings. There's a whole lot literally happening in that sentence. There's the experience of soldiers and their training. Some of you may know what's involved in that kind of training. To some of us, it's still a mystery. We know there's boot camp, and we know it changes people. This also made me wonder about core moral beliefs and how often we do and don't talk about those. What do we share? What are your core moral beliefs? I think I need to make a list and post it next to my computer and look at it more often and examine that. What happens if you can no longer live in a reliable, meaningful world? What if it's turned upside down because of what you were called and ordered to do? What happens here in this sentence when you can no longer be regarded as a decent human being, even to yourself? Maybe especially to yourself. This is a hard sentence. That's why I picked it. It's a hard sentence. It's a cause and effect at a deep level, and it has a cost. For our second read, do you have a conversation partner or two? Are you ready? I actually have a timer. I know that's terrible, but I have a timer. Just so you know, a minute and a half each to share. And then we'll pause. I have a bit of a bell because, you know, cell phones and those electronic timers. The second read is to think allegorically, pull one piece of that sentence out and examine it deeply. So you choose which part of that is. I'll press this timer. There's a countdown and a first bell, and a minute and a half later, a second bell, and you can switch partners so you each have a chance to speak. All right? Here we go. You switch partners now, please. Oops, sorry, keep going. Come back for just a moment. Take a deep breath. We'll do a third read of this sentence, and this time with your partners, if you would. Focus on what this sentence reminds you of in your own life. In your own life. So I'm going to have you look over the sentence one more time, and then I'll start our timer. And again, we'll have a minute and a half each to share and then switch partners. Okay. Begin.
Trouble or have this job opportunities threatened.
I'll call you back one more time. I think in the interest of time, we'll go on to our fourth read at this point. Is that okay? For this last read, talk together. What is it that we have been called to, not only by this sentence, but by the process of the conversation we've had? What is it we are called to? And we'll have a minute and a half just to talk as a group. Thank you all so much for participating in that. What are you called to? What are we called to as a people of faith? I'd like to conclude on a more positive note. I realize this was a heavy, heavy sentence to work with. And I feel like it's a little bit against my own core values of bringing joy to the world. So thank you for being willing to do that on a sunny Sunday morning before what I hope is a day off for you with family and friends. In addition to this spiritual practice of Lectio Divina, in the 8 years since this little blue book was published, this is called Bless All Who Serve, Sources of Hope, Courage, and Faith for Military Personnel and Their Families. I have carried 2 or 3 copies of this in my luggage, in my carry-on bag, wherever I travel, just in case. The irony is that I'm an introvert, and I have these in my bag, and I see people in uniform walking by me, and I cannot bring myself to run up to them and say, "Here, I have something for you." So what I found is that every airport in this United States, if it's large enough, has a USO. And I take my books there to give. So this is a reading from Rebecca Montgomery, who is an Army chaplain, a Unitarian Universalist minister, and serving not too far down the road from here. This is the first paragraph. Military service is a lesson in spiritual humility. In our often self-centered culture, the military puts other things over the needs and wants of any single person. The mission comes first. What is good for the organization comes first. Our historical footprint comes first. operational security comes first. As a people of faith, speaking of UUs, or anyone, we choose a spiritual path that calls us to be greater than just another Joe. We bring compassion to those who are suffering. We offer acceptance to those who have been cast aside. We befriend those we meet without checking out their political affiliation or religious beliefs first. We open our hearts and minds to spiritual wisdom from the world's traditions. Spiritual humility means putting ourselves aside and watching for opportunities to bring healing to a bruised and broken world. What I am feeling called to is ministry. Unitarian Universalist ministry. What I am called to is, instead of saying thank you for your service, thank you for being here now, and may your journey home be well.